Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy 4th of July. When it comes to money and personal finance, millions of people are caught up in a perfect storm. They want to believe that everything will work out okay. That's a quote from today's guest, who's co-author of the book On My Own Two Feet. She's helping women get their financial legs under them, leading them through the maze of personal finance to arrive at what she calls financial nirvana. Well, what's financial nirvana? In this case, it's smart savings, retirement security, budgeting, and simple but powerful investing, to name a few. It's advice a lot of women need, since in the not-so-distant past, men have handled the money. But today, with women living longer than men, a high percentage of women will spend as much or more of their lives single than coupled. And women are twice as likely as men to live out their golden years below the poverty level. Join us today for Financial Management Made Simple, whether you're a man or a woman, from buying a home to your credit score to how to invest. The simple way, you can call us with your questions and stories at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our guest today is Sharon Kadar. She's co-author of the book On My Own Two Feet. She has an MBA from Harvard and has worked in the financial industry for a long time. Sharon Kadar, thanks for joining us today.
Veronica, thank you for having me.
Sharon, you and your co-author, Manisha Thakur, wrote this book to empower women. And you've said that the majority of women aren't living from a position of financial strength. What do you mean by that?
That's right. So when you think about the country as a whole, we do, for both men and women, have a major financial literacy issue. So 70% of us live paycheck to paycheck, and that cuts across income lines. So you'd be amazed at how many people making six or seven figures are living from one paycheck to the next. Now, this is a huge issue, obviously, for the country overall. The reason we focus on women is we're the ones left holding the bag at the end of the day. So 80% of men die married, and 80% of women die single. And it's not that we're killing them off. It's that we live longer, as you said, and higher divorce rates in the country. So our point is that we women can't rely on Prince Charming. The odds are we'll be in charge of our finances at some point of our lives, and it's time that we take control of those finances.
Why do you think this is such a sticky wicket for women sometimes? Why is it intimidating to kind of get control of your money?
Well, you know, if you think traditionally, money has not been a realm where, men have been more apt to talk about money than women. So that's one piece of it. Often women left it to their spouses to deal with it. We know many situations where when women brought up the subject of money with their spouses, the spouse kind of put the topic to bed and really wasn't open to talking about it. So, you know, there's a host of reasons, and our point is, you know, it's time that women take charge, as you say, live from a position of financial strength. And really, if you think about it, Veronica, never in life have women been so strong. I mean, look at who runs eBay or Pepsi. It's women. Who's the Speaker of the House? Who runs Germany? And so it's time that we take that power. And what Manisha and I are trying to do is really create a movement where women inspire other women to live from a position of financial strength. And what that really means is if you have your finances in order, you can really lead the life you want to lead.
Can you tell us any stories about women who have been empowered to take control of their finances?
Sure. So what's amazing is the stories go from small to large. So there's three power steps to financial success that we talk about in On My Own Two Feet. They're saving, investing, and protecting yourself. And first, I'd like to say that, you know, the reason we wrote the book is that personal finance doesn't have to be complex. So remember that when you go out and actually try to take charge of your finances. On saving, there's several reasons you save. The first reason is for an emergency fund. And did you know that the average woman has about $2,000 of unexpected expenses in a given year, but yet she has less than $500 saved on average? So a real simple thing that listeners can do is create what we call a starter emergency fund of $2,000, so basically budget for unexpected expenses. And that's, you know, the first thing you really need to do. And you should see, Veronica, people's shoulders come down from their ears and, you know, actually be able to take a deep breath when they know that if the car breaks down, if something breaks down in the house, they have to go visit a sick relative, that they can actually do that. So, you know, that's the real start of it. And then, obviously, there's much bigger pieces to the equation in terms of, okay, investing, making sure that you put your hard-earned savings to work for you and not just leave it in cash. Too many people do that. And then protecting yourself. You don't want the nightmare situation that we've seen of, you know, thinking Prince Charming has it all worked out, and then you come home and realize that this beautiful life you had led was really all propped up by credit card debt and, you know, a mortgage that was feeding a failing business.
Well, you must have worked with some people or talked with people while you were doing this book. Can you tell us about any particular women and what happened to them personally?
Yeah, so, you know, our focus, I mean, sure, we talk with many folks, and our focus really is we consider ourselves financial literacy advocates. So what we're trying to do is really get to people before they completely, you know, let their financial situation go awry. So we're really trying to sort of be a financial nutritionist, if you will, and that's really the focus of what we've done. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked with many women, and what we're trying to do is learn from the mistakes of, you know, older generations to really teach women in their 20s, 30s, and 40s what they can do to avoid the mistakes of, you know, not saving enough and then having to work well past retirement, you know, investing in Uncle Joe's stock tip and then realizing that that wasn't such a smart investment, or, you know, not protecting yourself and ending up in a really troublesome situation.
Okay, so you've got the $2,000 for unexpected emergencies. Then what's the next step?
Sure. So it starts with saving, and there's three parts to saving. So first of all, there's an emergency fund. The emergency fund is, first of all, $2,000, but ultimately you want to build that up to 3 to 6 months of living expenses. And Veronica, the reason is that's incredibly empowering. In today's day, if you think about the modern woman and modern guy, we're switching jobs often and, you know, moving around to various cities. And by actually having an emergency fund, you can, for instance, leave a job that you want to go to another one. I mean, we know too many classic Sex and the City situations of women who had all the shoes in the closet but didn't have that emergency fund and so had to stay in jobs that they hated. I mean, that those kinds of stereotypes are true, and they do not need to be the case. So the first thing is you save for an emergency fund. Second reason you save is for big-ticket items. By that we mean things like a down payment on a car or a home. And then finally, you save for your retirement. Now, retirement might sound like, for any listeners who are in their 20s and 30s, a huge bore. They might say, oh, well, come on, Sharon, I have career ladders to climb. You know, I'm busy. I have things to do. Why the heck should I save for retirement now? But we like to tell a story about Amy and Zandra, who are two girlfriends, who both saved the same amount for retirement, $5,000 a year for 10 years, but the big difference was when they started saving. So Amy started at age 21, Zandra started at age 41, and the difference at retirement, those 20 years difference, meant that Amy would end up with about $2 million at retirement, and Zandra would end up with about $300,000. So starting to save early can really make the difference between, you know, Amy probably sitting on the beach having her martini and enjoying life, while Zandra will have to probably work a few years longer. So if you haven't started saving yet, it's definitely not a situation where you should beat yourself up, but you should start saving now. And in On My Own Two Feet, we provide specific amounts for how much you should be saving for each of those three areas.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's an inspiring story if you're 22, but if you've gotten to like 39 and you don't really have savings in the bank, should you be pulling your hair out? I mean,
no,
how much, what can you do when you're a little bit older?
Yeah, so Veronica, here's how the math works out. And our whole message is about encouraging people wherever they are. I mean, we really are aimed at 20s, 30s, and 40s. But, you know, this is about encouraging people wherever you are. So the way the math works out, so I'll just tell you some of the numbers. So if you save 10, we suggest for the three goals I talked about, saving 15% of your before-tax income for those goals. Roughly 5% of that will go to your emergency fund and to your big-ticket items, and about 10% to retirement. Now, first of all, if you can't get there today, know that knowledge is power. One of the biggest problems we see is financial education is not taught to people. Most of us don't learn it growing up. You know, in high school, we learn about sex education. We don't learn about financial education. And knowing where you're going, you'll get there over time. So we see people saving on $30,000 a year, and we see people who don't save on $200,000 a year. So, Veronica, when you take those numbers and you take that 10% saved for retirement, if you invest it wisely, if you do that in your 20s and 30s, the odds are that you'll end up at retirement living at about the same standard of living that you are living at today. If you start in your 40s, you will have to save more than 10%, but all is not lost. You'll simply have to save more or work a little bit longer. So that's how the math works out.
Well, what are the top things you think that we should be teaching our daughters about money?
The top things I think are really teaching them, ideally in high school. I truly think we need to have financial education in high school, the three tenets of financial success as far as we see them. So when we did our research for the book, I mean, we were amazed at how few people know how much to save and for what reasons. So what we just talked about, you know, for instance, at an unnamed Ivy League school, we do presentations all over the country. I was speaking to really smart kids, and I said, hey, you know, how much should you be saving once you go out and get that big fancy job for retirement? And, you know, one hand went up and they said 30%, and no one else knew the answer. So the basics, the true basics is what we should be teaching. Knowing your roadmap, knowing how much you should be saving, investing. That's my and Manisha's background. We have less than 50 pages in the book on investing because guess what? It doesn't have to be complex. And teaching our kids that and teaching them that when you turn on the TV and you hear about foreign currency derivatives or you see high-flying stocks like Google, you don't need to actually go out and pick the next Google or understand foreign currency derivatives to invest wisely.
Yeah, I have to say, you did keep the investing very simple. I understood it, so that was a sign it was simple to me. And I was surprised that you had said, go for index funds and don't worry about getting the individual stocks and real estate, invest in index funds.
Veronica, if you're into this, is, you know, we're very analytical and we look at the figures, the facts and figures. And, you know, if you look at, if you're under the age of 50 and you have more than 5 years on your side, your basic choices for where you could invest are stocks, bonds, or real estate. And there's no guarantee history will repeat. But if you do look at, you know, the past 80 years of the stocks and bonds, and real estate has a shorter history. But if you look at the numbers, stocks have had the highest investment return. Granted, it's a bump. Ride, you better put on your seatbelt. More than 1 in 4 years in history, the stock market has lost money. But if you're willing to ride those bumps, the stock market is pretty compelling. And many people then say, okay, well, great. So I'm under 50. I have more than 5 years on my side. But that's intimidating, Sharon. You told me that this should be simple. How do I go out and pick the next Google? How do I go pick that next high-flying mutual fund? But if you actually look at how historically those individual stocks have done, if you're just an average person, picking them or, you know, looking for that high-flying mutual fund, these index funds, Veronica, that you're talking about have beaten 80% of those high-flying mutual funds. So that's pretty powerful knowledge. And that means the next time you're at a dinner party and someone sitting next to you is talking about that stock that doubled for them overnight, you can sit and smile and know that you have, if history is any guide, and of course time will tell, a powerful, keep it simple plan, and you don't need to try to chase that high-flying stock. And, oh, by the way, that person sitting next to you probably didn't tell you about the 10 investments they made that went completely south, because that's not bragging rights for a dinner party, is it?
Right. Well, we're
and that's empowering.
We'll come back to that in just a moment. I'm going to jump in and take a break here. We're talking with Sharon Kadar. She is co-author of the book On My Own Two Feet. She's also a chartered financial analyst and an MBA from Harvard. Call in with your questions and your comments. How have you taught your children about money? Maybe your daughters in particular. How are you going about it and are they understanding it? Were you taught about money when you were growing up and where did it get you? Call up with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 11, Larry Mueller takes time out for Wisconsin Wildlife. He's joined by UW-Madison and Extension wildlife ecologist Scott Craven. Veronica Rickard back with you here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about money this hour and how to make it simple, how to understand it, especially if you're a woman, and how to pass it on to your sons and daughters. You can call us with your questions and comments this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Our guest is Sharon Kadar. She's co-author of the book On My Own Two Feet. And Sharon, we have some callers on the line, so let's get to them. Here's a call.
Terrific.
Here's one from Diane in Milwaukee.
What can you do when you have a lot of credit card debt and the interest rates get so high that you never get them paid off? Is there a way to consolidate these at a lower rate? What can you do?
Yeah, hi, Diane. Thank you for the call. So a lot of folks in the country, to your point, have credit card debt. In fact, the average household debt is about $9,000. We have pretty sort of simple advice, but it's basically to pay it down as fast as possible, and we provide an accelerated debt pay down schedule in our book. It's actually on page 102, where you can pay more than the minimum and get that debt paid down as fast as possible. Now, of course, the way you want to do it is pay the highest interest rate debt first. If you're really having trouble paying off your debt and you feel like there's no way that you're able to pay the minimum, then you probably need to take things up a level and read a book that's sort of specifically on debt, like Pay It Down by Gene Chatsky. That's a terrific book that focuses on debt.
Thank you for that call, Diane. And, you know, one question is, if someone has credit card debt and no savings, what do you do first? Do you save and try to simultaneously pay off your credit card? Should you just pay the minimum and go for the savings? What order should you do things in?
Sure, Veronica. So, it's amazing because we did about 20 back and forths for each of our chapters. And Chapter 10 of On My Own Two Feet talks exactly about this. And we provide a 7-step prioritization that people really have just loved because it's pretty clear-cut. But let me just give you the high-level thinking, which is, first of all, you want to make the minimum required debt payments on all of your outstanding debt. That's before you even think about saving or accelerating your debt pay down. The reason is, and some callers might ask about this, that protects your credit score. Your credit score is a 3-digit number. That's your financial reputation. And the biggest impact is whether you're paying your bills on time. So that's sort of step one. Second, Veronica, we talked at the start of the call about the starter emergency fund. Start that $2,000 starter emergency fund so that you're actually budgeting for unexpected expenses. Third, if your employer has what's called a match, then you want to take advantage of that. So most employer-sponsored retirement plans some of them offer what's called a match. So if you put in 3% of your salary, they might match every dollar that you put in with 50 cents of free money. And if they do that, you want to take advantage of that. Then we suggest building up your emergency fund to 3 to 6 months of living expenses. And then I won't walk you through the next few steps, but following that, we provide an accelerated debt pay down schedule in the book that people have found both simple and effective.
So getting back to that, paying off debt versus saving. So
yeah.
You're saying even if you have nothing in the bank, you have $0, you should just, and maybe you have a lot of debt, maybe you have $10,000, you're saying
yeah.
You should totally pay that off before you even think about savings?
No, that's not at all what I'm saying.
Okay,
so,
I must have misunderstood.
What we were saying was, first of all, pay all your bills on time because that impacts your credit score.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're actually saving, Veronica. So the next 3 steps I talked about are saving. So what you're doing is you're building up your emergency fund and contributing to your retirement plan at work up until the match. Only after you do that do you go and try to accelerate the credit card pay down. So we provide, and you know, I'll give you some of the highlights, some rough rules of thumb. Like if your credit card debt is $5,000 or less, pay at least an extra $50 every month. If it's between $5,000 and $10,000, add another $100 a month. And if it's over $10,000, pay an extra $150 a month. And that will help pay down your debt much faster than paying off the minimum. And once you contribute that extra $50 to $150 a month, then you can start saving more for a down payment on a home or contributing more to your retirement plan at work or an IRA account.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phones now. And here's a call from Gene in Menominee. Hi, Gene, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes. Are you aware of the effect of savings accounts on eligibility for government subsidies such as or supplements such as food stamps and housing assistance?
You know, I'm not. I'm sorry. I actually.
Let's put this. Yeah. I just found out that if you have $2,000 in the bank,
yeah,
you're not eligible.
Okay, yeah, that's not an area that it's a very important area, obviously, for people who are truly just struggling to get by. And for all those folks, we have a lot of respect for you trying to make things work. And we know that's really tough. We didn't focus on that. So we really tried to, in writing our Keep It Simple book, focus on folks who are earning, enough that they can start saving. And we didn't go into that area that you're talking about.
Do you have any resources that someone could go to if they were interested in that?
You know, I actually don't for that. That's the first I've gotten on that one, so apologies to both of you, but I don't.
Okay, no problem. Let's go to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Hello, Mike. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. Good morning. I really love this topic. I have three daughters that I have raised with my wife and put through college. And
congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I heard you mention that you have given seminars on college campuses, and I wonder what you talk about to the students. You mentioned debt a little bit, but really the how much pressure there is to get credit cards and go into debt, and really how if these students get into debt early and women, how that can affect the overall financial plan and how devastating that could be long term. And I'd be interested to know what you talk about in your book and what you talk about in your seminars on that topic.
Okay, Mike, I have to say from Manish and I collectively, we love you for raising that because it is such a key issue. It is such a hot button of ours, and it's actually one of the reasons we wrote the book. So by design, the first chapter is on savings, and the second chapter is on credit cards because of this. And we say in the book that credit card debt can be as debilitating, truly, as getting addicted to drugs. We think if you haven't now, don't beat yourself up, but what you're talking about, Mike, is part of our mission, getting to folks young enough so that they can avoid getting into that spiral of credit card debt. And as, Mike, you're suggesting, on college campuses today, the situation is such that credit cards are being handed out basically, not to be cavalier about it, but left and right. I mean, we've heard stories about restaurants having incentives to offer free food so that a student can sign up for a credit card. So when we talk, our speech on university campuses, and we're just thrilled that it's really resonating with the younger audience, is, first of all, for women, it's called A Man Is Not a Financial Plan, and it's all about saving, investing, and protecting yourself. And the saving piece, when we talk about what we talked about earlier in this hour, we say, look, one of the biggest things that can get you in trouble on meeting your savings goal is credit card debt. And credit card debt is far from free money. And we basically tell folks that when you are paying the minimum monthly payment, if you have an average card, basically double whatever you the cost of whatever you're buying. So a $100 pair of jeans, that's $200. And we have seen the faces of young women and men in this country when they see that. And fortunately, I think it's causing them to think twice.
You know, I remember I got my first credit card in college, and it was easy to get. I remember I just pulled down a flyer from a bulletin board. They were all over the place.
Yeah, and Veronica, did you really think about what you were charging and whether you could pay it off? I mean, how did you think about it?
No way. I remember I just thought that it was empowering because it felt empowering, the opposite of what you're saying, because I finally had some money. And I did get some credit card debt accrued, but I had no idea how to manage it. No one had ever really talked to me about that before.
Yeah, exactly. So we're and you know, when I was on my college campus, you know, obviously some years ago, it wasn't the same situation that it is today. So the free access, you know, the free wielding credit card debt that, you know, that's out there is such a risk to financial success. And that is probably the biggest thing that we try to talk with younger folks about. And the other hot button is health insurance. So an astounding number of people in their 20s don't have health insurance. And if you're listening today and you don't, we know that you probably think you're invincible, and that's wonderful to have that youthful spirit, but not having health insurance can really wreck your finances. And even a catastrophic, what's called a high deductible catastrophic plan, is a great way to protect yourself. You can go to a website like ehealthinsurance.com and look at those plans today.
All right. Well, thank you for that call about credit cards, Mike. And here's a call from Sylvia in Rice Lake. Sylvia, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to know if anybody had been watching, I believe it was 60 Minutes. I'm not sure. They had a show on about identity theft, and it was through the Bank of America and how much Bank of America lost on all of these identity thefts and everything. And I agree that this should not be happening. But I looked on the statement. They had a picture of the statement that they had been sending to this bogus man that eventually got caught. And the interest rate was 64.25%.
Oh, my gosh.
I could not believe it. As my sister told me, she said, that's kneecap surgery.
It really is. And that identity theft, I'm glad you raised that, because identity theft is a huge and growing issue, unfortunately. And there's a few ways that we suggest that, you know, protecting yourself. So one of the common ways to, first of all, steal your identity is through credit cards. So when you do get credit card solicitations in the mail, don't just throw them out. Make sure you either shred them or rip them up into teeny tiny pieces. Also, if you do get a call or an email from your bank or a credit card, don't respond to it right away. Call your credit card company back using the phone number on your card to validate that it's an authentic email or call. And the credit card company or bank won't be offended by your doing this. And if your card does get stolen, report it immediately. You're only liable for $50 if you report a missing card within 24 hours. So that's one big piece. The other important piece, we talked briefly about your credit score, which is that three-digit number. That's your financial reputation. Your credit score is formed from your credit report, and the credit report that is held for folks more often than not is actually inaccurate. So there's an astounding number of inaccuracies, and identity theft is very common, and one way that you can help protect yourself from that is you can go, the U.S. government has made it free, to www.annualcreditreport.com, and for each of the three main credit bureaus that keep your credit reports, you can get one from each of them per year. So if you do that and actually check to make sure that the information is yours and not a case of identity theft, that can really help protect you. One, keep it simple, way to do it is check one of those three every 4 months. So put a reminder on your calendar that every 4 months you're going to check one of the three main credit bureaus.
So in terms of your credit card and the offers that come in the mail, you said you should shred them up.
Yeah.
What if you get, you know, tons in the mail? My husband and I get sometimes three in a single day. Is there any way to stop, to get off some of the lists that must be generated by these companies?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question, Veronica. You could call the credit, the three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, and see if they could help you with that. And then maybe you'd, you know, save some paper, too, to your point.
So, Sharon, do you own a shredder? Is that how you do it?
You know, it's funny that you said that, because that was the other thing I was going to say, is we have a huge shredder. Not surprisingly, after writing this book, we have a huge shredder.
The giant economy-sized shredder.
Really?
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Here's a call from Esty in Madison. Hi, Esty, go ahead.
Hi, Veronica, before I ask my question, I just want to tell you I ordered stickies that you can order these stickies with your address. I ordered a roll that says return to sender, please take me off your mailing list. And, you know, I get so much less junk mail nowadays.
Really?
Yeah, so that's one thing you can do.
That's really smart. I hadn't thought of that.
It's a clever idea.
Return to sender stickies.
Yeah. Return to sender, take me off your mailing list.
But then
you have to do that if you ask them.
So do you just stick it on the front of the envelope then and pop it back?
You know how you can return unwanted mail? Yeah, you stick it on the envelope, you put it back in your mailbox, you put an arrow that points towards that sticky, and your mail carrier has to take it back.
Ah, I like it.
Yeah, just don't open it.
Very good. Well, what's your question, Esty?
Well, here's my question. So I'm one of those who started saving for retirement a little later in life, and fairly recently I realized that the companies that I can save with through my workplace, the one that I'm saving with is taking a fairly larger commission than another one that I can use, and I've been wanting to switch to that other one. I also like their politics better, but I just don't know if this would be a smart move. Does it matter if I leave everything that I have in the old one and start donating putting money monthly in another one? Will that put me back? Or?
So let me understand the question. So are you saying you work for the same for an employer right now that has an employer-sponsored retirement plan, and you're trying to decide whether to switch investments within that same plan?
No, to another plan.
But with your employer?
Well, I work basically for the state of Wisconsin, and we can choose between several different plans, different companies, and they all, I suppose, give us a better deal or something. I don't know why they are sponsored, but we are the ones who pay into it. We just pay from our paycheck.
Right.
And so I can choose between company A, or, I'm with company A, which charges 1.5%, let's say, and company C charges only 0.5%.
And what I would say broadly, and I don't think we can answer that question in this short time, but let me give you some sort of guiding rules of thumb. So,
sure.
Yeah, to your point, fees is a big issue. So that 1% difference in fee can really add up to a lot over time. What we didn't talk about is which you think is a better investment. So obviously you have to take that into consideration as well. All that said, if you end up deciding that the lower fee option is also, you think, a better investment choice, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't want to switch then.
So the question is simply, if I already have, let's just throw a number. Let's say I have $30,000 with company A.
Yeah.
And would it be, if I start with zero with company C, does that put me back, or is it the same? Do you know what I'm asking?
Esty, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there for the break, but we'll come back right after that. So thanks for your patience there. We will be back with Sharon Kadar, co-author of the book On My Own Two Feet. She's answering your questions and comments about money management. You can call in and join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up after 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller talks critters with Scott Craven, who is the UW-Madison and Extension wildlife ecologist. Then at 12:30, Jim Fleming reads from Jimi Hendrix Turns 80. It's a comic novel by Tim Sandlin. I'm Veronica Rickert, back with you for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we've been talking with Sharon Kadar. She's co-author of the book On My Own Two Feet. She has an MBA from Harvard and is a chartered financial analyst. Sharon, we were taking a question from Esty before we had to go to the break. Were you able to answer her?
Yeah, no, Esty, so, I think we should close by saying, if you have two different accounts, that's fine. The key is for you to keep track of them. And when you do leave your employer, consider doing a rollover IRA. And we provide the steps on page 175 of the book for that. I guess that's probably all we can talk about in this radio session.
Well, thanks a lot, Esty. I hope that helps. And we'll take a call from Diana in Alma Center. Hi, Diana. You're on the air. Hello, Diana. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. You want to try once more? No, I think we have lost Diana. If you want to call back from a landline, we can go that way. And take a call now from Jackie in Stockton.
Good morning. Thanks for the program. I'm 60 years old, and I am considering changing careers. And in that changing careers means I would have to go to back to school. And I'm thinking that it would be the way I would finance that is to use some of my money from my retirement funds. I only have about $90,000 in retirement right now, but I do have a small pension that I get every month, about $600. So I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts about that? Would I be foolish at my age to? I know lots of people have done it, but
what do you do now, Jackie, and what are you considering doing?
I'm a minister. And I'm thinking of going into nursing.
And is the pay, how does the pay differ, do you know?
Well, there's so many variables it would be hard to just say that. Probably on the whole, nursing would pay better because in ministry you have to pay all your own taxes, and depending on where you are, depends on the kind of salary you get. You know, you're self-employed as a minister. And every church is different. In terms of what they can pay. So salary would be much more stable in a nursing profession. So that's just what I was thinking. But
when do you enjoy being a minister right now?
Yeah, I do, but I'm also tired. It's a difficult profession.
Yeah, and how long would nursing take and how much money would it cost you?
I already have a master's degree, but I'd have to go back to a bachelor's in nursing and take about 2 years of science courses to be able to pass, to get a bachelor's of science in nursing. So my hunch, it would be probably about $15,000 to $20,000.
And 2 years.
For the 2 years, yeah, given how much it costs. I also have to do some of the prelims courses.
Yeah,
because I didn't have any science. I had a Bachelor of Arts degree.
And is there any way to go to nursing school at night while you're working?
In any other career, yeah. Ministry, it's 7:24.
Really? You need to make the decision that's right for
right.
you, but given your savings amount and your age, I would much rather see you having income come in and try to craft your ministry, you know, sort of create your own reality around your ministry profession where you can do the nursing at night. It's up to you, but, you know, I'd be a little bit nervous about, you know, having no income for a couple years.
Hope that helps you, Jackie, and thank you for the call. We do have a couple of open lines now, so you can get your questions and comments in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And we'll take a call now from Sean in Black River Falls. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a 23-year-old recent college graduate. And I'm fortunate enough that when I graduated from The Ohio State University, I had zero debt of any kind.
Good for you, Sean. That's amazing.
Yeah, I have to thank my parents for that. And that actually is sort of relevant to my question. I have no credit card debt, as I said, or no debt of any kind. But I also had no college loans because my parents were able to pay for my college outright for me. And they don't make a lot of money, but the way that they did it was my parents were really almost obsessive about creating separate accounts. They had an account for a car, an account for my college fund, an account for groceries, a separate account. They had their income all divvied up. And so I'm wondering, now that I have a job that allows me to save some money, I'm wondering, aside from getting that emergency fund that you talked about, once I've got that saved, should I just try to get all my money or all additional savings for a while into the, you know, into index funds or invested so they're working for me? Or is it maybe a good idea to create separate accounts with specific purposes like my parents did?
Yeah, Shantus, first of all, kudos to your parents. It's really impressive what they did, and it's great. It just warms my heart for you to be 23 and asking these questions. I mean, we wish every 23-year-old asked these questions, and it's really, you know, a large part of why we wrote the book. So first of all, for you, do you have a job right now?
Yes, Sean, I'm sorry, Sean, go ahead.
Yes, I do. I have a job that it's permitting me to meet all of my expenses and save somewhere between $800 and $1,000 a month.
Okay, so are you saving then, I guess, at least 10? Because the biggest thing for you is if you can, beyond your emergency fund and, you know, saving for, like, a car or a home, if you can save 10% of your salary, your before-tax salary, year in and year out for retirement, that will be just amazing. You might remember I talked about Amy and Zandra and the power of time. It's truly magical. So does your employer offer an employer-sponsored retirement plan?
Unfortunately, no. Well, they do, but they're working on developing one right now, but I won't be able to participate in it for about another year.
Okay, and do you have an IRA account?
No, I don't. All I've got is an account with a chunk of, as you term it, emergency money sitting in it. I'm really just starting.
Okay. So, Sean, first of all, I should tell you, even though it's a modern girl's guide, as Lynn Scherr says in the back of our book, put on a wig and read it. You'll like it. Guys are reading it, too. But what you should do is save 10%. If you qualify for a Roth IRA, so if you make under $99,000 a year as a single person, you can qualify for a Roth IRA. Would you qualify for that?
Probably, except I'm not terribly clear on the differences between a Roth IRA and a regular IRA.
Okay, so both of them are great choices. The Roth is a little bit better. There's income restrictions, so you know, if you're single, you can't make more than $99,000 to get the full benefits. But with a Roth, what you can do is you can put this year $4,000 into a Roth. And the benefit is you put in after-tax dollars and you never pay taxes again. It also doubles as a backup emergency fund, so we wouldn't want you to do it unless it was a true dire emergency. But if you did need to take out what you put in, you could do it without take out the contributions without penalty. So for you, what you probably should do is go to a discount brokerage firm like a Vanguard, Fidelity, or Charles Schwab. Those are three of the biggest in the U.S. We list in the appendix of our book contact information for them. And you should probably open up a Roth IRA. You obviously need to personalize the advice, you know, sort of what fits for you. But at your age, definitely consider stocks and index funds and decide what's right for you. So invest that Roth money appropriately. And then if you have more money than that $4,000, open up another account and you can invest that similarly. But you need to definitely take that step.
And you can only have one Roth IRA. You can't have multiples.
Yeah, you can, you know, one Roth IRA, this year $4,000, next year $5,000, but don't let that stop your savings. So you can open up another account, just a sort of plain vanilla taxable account, and invest it the same way. So, you know, for instance, if you were at Vanguard, you'd have two accounts.
And is there a minimum contribution for a Roth?
Great question. Veronica, yes, there's different minimums depending on the discount brokerage firm. But if you do automatic deposits, say, you know, every month you take a certain sum and have it transferred to your Roth, sometimes that minimum will get waived for you.
And we did have a caller in terms of stopping the unsolicited credit card offers. We did have a postal worker who called in to say that the stickers that I think it was Esty talked about that said return to sender won't help for bulk mail, that they just go into the recycling bin.
That's good to know, because that's the first I had heard of that.
So another caller, thank you to both these callers, did call to say, this was Jeff in Eau Claire, that you can go to the website www.optoutprescreen.com, and that's just the words, opt out prescreen. And he says you'll be able to say you don't want unsolicited credit card offers, which will hold for 5 years. So that's a pretty good deal.
Optoutprescreen.com. That's great. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. So thank you to Jeff in Eau Claire.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
And I hope those that answered Sean's question as well there. And, you know, Sean said he got through college without any debt, but what about the parents? What do you do if you want to save for your child's education?
Yeah, you know, that was one I was thinking about as Sean was talking. So, Sean, I hope in your parents' case that they saved for their retirement first. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this, sort of this seven-step process for how to balance debt and savings. What we would say is absolutely save for your retirement first and make sure you're meeting your savings goals before you save for your kids' education. You know, what if you're at 65, you really need to think very practically about how are you going to eat versus, you know, your child can get a scholarship or can take loans.
So what should you do, though, if you want? What's a good place to put your money to save for your kids' education?
Yeah, we really like the, for the college savings, we like the 529 plans. And you can go to savingforcollege.com to find out more about those plans.
Okay, sounds good. And we'll take a call from Chris in Saukville. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to pass along something I've thought about over the last several weeks, listening to both On Your Money and on this program, the references to being able to make withdrawals from a Roth IRA.
Right.
That only happens after the funds have been on deposit for 5 years. And I questioned that when I heard it, and I called my bank back to inquire on. Yes, it's absolutely true. You cannot make emergency withdrawals from a Roth IRA unless the funds have been on deposit for 5 years. And people ought to know that.
Thank you for that.
Okay, thank you, Chris. And Sharon, we did have, you remember Diana, we lost her call. I think she was on a cell phone, but her question was, and maybe we can answer it for her now, she wanted to know what educational resources you could use for middle school students to get them thinking about finances in a productive way.
Yeah, you know, there's a book, I think it's called Financially Fit Kids. We don't really focus, I think it's really important, but we don't really have any specific advice from us on how to talk with your kids about money, you know, sort of middle school kids. But Financially Fit Kids, I think, is a good resource.
Do you work with younger children, or is it primarily the colleges that you go around
to? No, you know, Veronica, I mean, a little bit of history of On My Own Two Feet. So the book really came to us. So Manisha, my co-author, is my best girlfriend. We both work in money management, which is a very male-dominated area. And we would have fellow females come and ask us. And I should say, by the way, I'm 32. She's 36. You know, come ask us for good books on personal finance. And books that we thought were great, people were only getting to chapter two. And what we realized is personal finance is boring to many, many folks. And what we wrote is a book on personal finance for those who aren't really interested in personal finance. So it's short, fun, and easy to read. And people are really, the biggest compliment we get is both men and women are reading it cover to cover. So we really focused on, you know, 20s and 30s, get to people before their finances are a mess, you know, 40s as well, and trying to help people sort of in that specific niche.
Well, you said before you're trying to start a movement here.
Yes.
With women to lead empowered financial lives. So how's it going so far?
You know, the response has just been terrific. I mean, I think like I said, the biggest compliment is that people are reading On My Own Two Feet cover to cover. And I think people feel empowered by the message that your finances do not have to be complex. A keep it simple plan is most often the best approach. So that coupled with actually being able to get through a book, I mean, we have just had a response that has been tremendous, and we're just privileged to be able to help.
Well, that sounds pretty good. It seemed like a very concise look at finances, I thought, and especially for younger people who don't have the time, maybe, or the inclination to read a thick tome on financial matters.
And you know, Veronica, what we found is most people don't. So, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, 50, 60, 70-year-olds who read our book, but they'll probably need to read ours, and then, you know, their situation is likely more complex, and we'll have to read a follow-on book or two. But what we have found is most people just aren't that interested in finance, and we're here to say that's okay. We'll just dish up the basics.
So going back to the credit cards again,
yes.
And your credit score, what can you do if you have a bad credit score and you need to repair it? How long does it take and what can you do?
So first of all, your credit score is a little bit like the making of a hot dog. You don't quite know exactly, you know, how how it all, you know, works out. But there is some plain vanilla basic stuff you have to do, and it's kind of like eating your vegetables, but it works. So the biggest thing you need to do is to pay all of your bills on time. That is quite simply the most important thing, in addition to making sure that your reports are accurate. We talked about that earlier in the show. Beyond that, you know, you should keep the amount that you owe on your credit cards as low as possible. Keep your oldest account open. Don't close down old credit card accounts if you're within 18 months of making a major purchase like a car or home. And if you are shopping for a car or home, keep it to a two-week period as that gets lumped as one inquiry. And finally, don't apply for a bunch of credit cards all at once. And if you do have a bad credit card, and we're not fans of this in general anyways, we definitely wouldn't go save 10% on a sweater by opening up a store card. Those, by the way, can have some of the highest interest rates.
So if you've got the bad score already,
yeah.
How long do you think it takes to go from a bad score to a decent score?
You know, it just depends. It's very case-specific. It can take a while. It can take, several months. It can take over a year. And what I would say is exercise patience. When you do check your score, it doesn't count as an inquiry when you're checking your own score. So you can keep monitoring it. You can go to myfico.com and get one of your scores for about $15 or all three of your scores for about $50, you know, and just keep checking it and just keep paying those bills on time. And if you're having trouble paying them, have a glass of wine, have an ice cream. But the last thing you want to do is shove those bills under your bed or something like that and ignore them, because that'll just make things worse.
I read in the bio that you have a daughter. What are you going to teach her about money?
Well, she seems to be picking up my investing books, which warms my heart. But, you know, I mean, I grew up, both Manisha and I are, you know, went to public schools. My parents are immigrants. My dad came over to the U.S. with a plane ticket and kind of, you know, made his way from there. So we grew up with a very sort of practical childhood, and I'd like her to, you know, we worked when we were able to, and I'd like her to grow up understanding the value of a dollar. And
okay, sorry. Thanks, Sharon. We have to leave it there. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you to everyone. Take care. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th.
Bye-bye.
Sharon Kadar is the author of On My Own 2 Feet, A Modern Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.